start by giving you a little muscle. I am very much inclined personally to take muscle and to take good advice. But there's a halacha that you have to try to give a person muscle privately first before you give it publicly. I was traveling through Harnos a few days ago, and I see plastered all over the walls in gigantic letters, they laugh, are you prepared for Kabbalah Torah? Not my car. They is here. I don't know if I'm prepared for Kabbalah Torah, but why is somebody embarrassing me? I think you love it. So next time you want to give me a hand, please do it more softly. And take most of it, it doesn't need to be for rapid than that. Thank you. Every Yontif is not just a commemoration of the event that took place on that Yontif, but it is reliving the Yontif itself. And therefore, just as the first Shavuos was preceded by a period of preparation before we could receive the Torah, so too every subsequent Shavuos need that same preparation, because we are not merely commemorating the giving of the Torah, but we are receiving it. It's a strengthening, a reacceptance of that original Matan Torah yearly. And Sfirat HaOmer is that hachana, that preparation. The truth is that the preparation is the main thing. We don't even celebrate Matan Torah. The Torah was given on the seventh day of Sivan, according to the Gemara and Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yossi, who most of the Rishonim seem to pass in life. And we celebrate Shavuot on the sixth day of Sivan, so we're a day earlier. The truth is that Moshe Rabbeinu added an extra day. The Torah really should have been given on the sixth day of Sivan. But Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Jewish people weren't ready, so he added an extra day, and we celebrated on the day before the Torah was actually given, because in truth, the only thing that we can do is prepare for the Torah. The fact that the Rabban Shalom gives the Torah, that's a gift. Chazal say, and someone tells you, Yogati Masorti Tam, and someone tells you that they toiled and they found, then you should believe them. The Sfarim ask, toiling and finding are not terms that go together. When you toil, you achieve. Finding something is by luck. It's purely accidental. It's not commensurate or in any way related to how much toil you put in. So it should have said, Yogati Yisatki. Why Yogati Matsofti? So Sforim say that Torah is something that a person cannot achieve on his own, not attain on his own. The human mind is incapable of learning Torah, and we'll see that the human body is incapable of doing mitzvahs by itself. It's totally a present from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there's a prerequisite. You have to prepare. You have to put in the toil. If you fulfill the condition, you fulfill the prerequisite that the Ribbono Shel Olam will give you Torah. Yogati u'matzasi. So all we can do is prepare. The attainment, the achievement, that's in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, echad amar tov, echad amar tov, doesn't make a difference so much what you attain, what you achieve. Law left on the law of Ligmar. You don't have to finish anything. But you have to try. You have to put in your total effort. And when it comes to mitzvahs, the same thing. The Gemara says, "B'chol yom v'yom yitzru shalom iskader olam." Every day the Yetzer Hara gets stronger, u'mishchadik olam. And he gets new. You think you conquered the Yetzer Hara yesterday, he's going to give up? No. Brings in a few more legions. Gets a little bit stronger. And not only that, you think that you already know his strategy, tomorrow will find new strategies. The Ilmole HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, the Ribbono Shel Olam wouldn't help us. Eino Yochelo. It's impossible to overpower the Yetzer Hara. Impossible. With our own powers, it's impossible. The Ribbono Shel Olam has to help us. If the Ribbono Shel Olam helps us, why do we have to get involved? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam won't help us unless we initiate, unless we prepare, unless we fulfill that condition, that prerequisite. So both when it comes to Asiyas HaMitzvahs, both when it comes to Limud HaTorah, the Ribbono Shel Olam basically is in charge of the attainment, of the achievement. What's in our hands? The preparation. So we don't celebrate when the Torah was actually given. We celebrate the last day of the preparation. That's our duty. We prepare in that time for 50 days, and in our time for 49 days. And the 50th day, the 50th day represents the day, the last day of preparation, the day before the Torah was actually given, because we celebrate what our part is. And the whole name Shavuos represents that. We don't call Shavuos for Matan Torah. We call Shavuos for the weeks of preparation that preceded. That's the Yontif. The Yontif is the culmination of Shavuos, of 7 weeks of preparation. That's our part, and that's our celebration. So you have to understand, how do you prepare? How do you prepare for Torah? What do you do? What are the preparations that are necessary? You'll forgive me if some of the things I'm going to tell you I may have said here before, I don't remember. I'm hoping if I don't remember, nobody else does either. But I have a funny feeling that maybe some of these things I've said before. But that's what preparation is. Every year, Shavuos also came before. Last year and the year before that. The same Shavuos. The same preparation. But we still need to be restrengthened and reawakened every year. The first preparation is in ourselves. And that hinges on what Torah is. The first preparation is getting a perspective on what Torah really is. And the story is told, as I'm sure I've said somewhere before, many times, but every time I hear it, it makes an impression on me. So I'll say it again for my sake. You have to really challenge me. I'm going to get prepared, whether you like it or not. The Bertrand Russell was a professor of ethics in City College. And he himself was a very unethical, immoral person. And he advocated many unethical and immoral things. So the ethics committee of the college called him in and they said, Professor Russell, we have a tremendous problem with you. You occupy the seat of ethics in this college and yet you are not an ethical person. How do you resolve that conflict? So he said, look, 20 years ago I was a professor of geometry in England. No ethics committee ever called me in and said, Professor Russell, we have a tremendous problem with you. You teach geometry in this college, and you are neither a square, a circle, or a parallelogram. How could it be? I don't have to be what I teach. I just have to teach it. Chazal tell us, in Yom Ruachem, Chochma Bagoyim, Tam, if somebody tells you that wisdom exists by the nations of the world, you should believe them. But Torah Bagoyim, Al Tam, but the Torah exists by the nations of the world, don't believe it. The difference between Torah and Chochma is epitomized in that story. Chosma is something that a person possesses. We make a bracha on an unusual chacham, an unusual sage in earthly and secular wisdom. Asher Nathan Echachmasa Lebosar Vadam. The Rabban Hashem gave us his wisdom to flesh and blood. God gives the wisdom. It's totally in the domain of the person who has it. Do what you want with it. You can remain flesh and blood, but you have a talent, you have a wisdom, it's yours. Wisdom is something a person possesses, and he can do what he wants with it, and it doesn't necessarily have to affect his personality, his character, his personal life. It can, but it doesn't have to. He can be the same literary talent and be the same Bowery boss. Makes no difference. The fact that he's a Bowery boss doesn't detract one bit from his literary talent, and his literary talent doesn't make him anything more than a Bowery boss. Wisdom, his personality is his own personality, and the twain do not have to meet. Therefore, that's Chosma. Torah, we make another bracha. Asher cholak mechosmoso liyoreo, the Rabban Hashem apportions out his wisdom, liyoreo, to those that fear him. Two differences. One is the Rabban Hashem doesn't give Torah. He apportions it out. He remains connected. And if he doesn't remain connected to it, if it doesn't have a connection to the Rabban Shalom, then it's not Torah. And it's only the Yoreo to those who fear him. And therefore, the ideal of Torah is that it should make an impression on the person. Because if it doesn't, the Gemara says, Divrei Torah is Sholim Ke'esh. Torah is compared to fire. Ma'esh Oseroshim, as Torah Oseroshim. Fire makes an impression, Torah makes an impression. And if it doesn't make an impression, it's not Torah. There were great wise people who seemed to know Torah very well. And they found that writing their Chidushei Torah, very profound Chidushei Torah, while smoking cigars by Shabbat. They weren't learning Torah, and they weren't writing Torah. They were writing Chosma, and they learned Chosma. but it never became Torah because it didn't make an impression on us. As much as the fire that is produced by the material that you put on clothing or on hats and dance around, burning at a chasana, without becoming a Buddhist monk who immolates himself, right? We do it more than one chasana. It's not fire, it's stage fire. It looks like fire. But how do I know it's not real fire? Because it doesn't burn anything. It doesn't make an impression. So it may look like fire, it may even smell like fire. But it's not fire because it makes no impression. Torah that does not make impression on the life of the person who learns it remains hard. Plain ordinary wisdom. Something the person possesses, it's just another type of wisdom, and that's it. That the Goyim can also possess. But the Torah must be horot, must teach and show in order to be Torah. And if not, remain chosma, that is a Jewish concept. That, the Goyim al-Tam, that concept doesn't exist by the nation of Israel. And therefore, we prepare for Torah in one aspect by preparing ourselves. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. If you want to know what the preparation, what comes before Torah, it's making sure that when Shavuot comes, we're not expected. That we're not the type of people who fire can't make an impression on. That the fire of Torah can't permeate our being, can't make the impression it's supposed to make. So we have to develop the kinds of personality, the kinds of character that are capable and conducive for Torah to make an impression. And without Derech Eretz, and in Derech Eretz, there's no nidos, then Torah can't make that impression. So part of Sefirat HaOmer, part of the concept of Sefirat HaOmer is nidos. That's why every night there's another nidos of Ribono Shel Olam that we have to emulate. These are the nidos that we have to inculcate in ourselves in order to prepare for the Torah by preparing ourselves. And that's the goal of the Torah, that we should transform ourselves into living Sefirat HaOmer. As the Gemara says in Makos, people are very, very foolish. Because they stand up, the Kami Mikne Sefer Torah, below Kami Mikne Gavra. They stand up for a Sefer Torah, but they don't stand up for a Talmud Torah. A Sefer Torah, dead parchment, with dead ink, dead Atzei Chaim, and it sits in the Aron Kodesh a whole week. Nobody speaks to it, doesn't speak to anybody else, not even a telephone inside. You can't even get to it. And that's a Sefer Torah. Yet when the Sefer Torah comes out of the Aron Kodesh, everybody jumps to their feet. And a Talmud Chacham, who is the embodiment of that Torah, the goal of that Torah, the purpose of the Torah is to have an impression on a human being and make him a living Sefer Torah. The living Sefer Torah. That people don't jump to their feet so fast. It's foolishness. Because they don't understand what Torah is all about. Torah is not meant to remain in a dead state. Torah is meant to make an impression on a human being and transform him into a living Torah. And therefore, it's that living Torah that deserves the ultimate respect. That's the preparation that each and every one of us have to prepare. Before there's a Torah to be got, we have to prepare ourselves to be fit to receive that Torah. To be the kinds of people that are conducive that Torah should make an impression on us. And that's what we count. The Omer. What was the Omer? The Omer was the sacrifice that was brought to permit eating the new crop. The new crop that had taken root after the last Pesach wasn't allowed to be harvested or eaten until the 16th day of Nisan passed, until the Omer was brought. So, what does that mean? Just as much as physical food. The Omer represents that which permits us to eat physical food. Physical food is only valuable if it's integrated, if it's assimilated into a person's entire being. But if the food will sit in your stomach, or even if it'll travel to your head, and just sit there, undigested, unassimilated, it's worthless. 100% worthless. So too, Torah is spiritual. If you don't assimilate it into every cell of your body, into every part of your being, it's just as worthless. The Torah remains in your head, but the Torah remains somewhere else. But it's not assimilated into your being, it doesn't become part of you. And just as much as physical food is worthless in such a way, spiritual food is the same way. Therefore, the Sforim say that we start the Omer by bringing a korban from barley that is animal food. And we culminate the counting of the Omer by bringing a korban of the Shtei Alechem, which is from wheat, which is human food. We start off like animals almost, before we refine our characters and our personalities, and it takes 49 days of refinement to be able to come, to be able to eat human food. Shamshon 4 verse says that's what it means in Turkey Avos. Main Kemah in Torah. And in Main Torah in Kemah. If there's no Torah, then there's no purpose for flour. Animals eat unrefined food. They eat the grain and the meat. Only human beings have a need to make flour because human beings are refined. But if there's no Torah, there's no refinement. And if there's no refinement, there can't be a Torah. So it's the food that we eat that even symbolizes the refinement that we have to attain. And the truth is that is another reason why we don't celebrate the Torah on the day of the year. We celebrate it a day early, on the 6th and not the 7th. Because the main accomplishment of Matan Torah was the fact that the Torah descended into this world. Because the Torah descended into this world way before Matan Torah. All the Mauritian learned Torah, and Noah learned Torah, and the Avos learned Torah. It was no secret. Everybody was learning Torah. It was already the pre-publication edition was given out. Everybody had it. Everybody knew what the Torah was all about. Everybody was learning Torah. And what was the big deal? We got the Torah, Matan Torah. The big deal of Matan Torah was the Torah became part of Klal Yisrael. That's what changed by Matan Torah. The angels were very jealous. They didn't want Rabbanu Shalom to give the Torah into this world because they knew once it was given into this world, it became part and parcel of the Jewish people. And there is no Torah without the Jewish people and no Jewish people without the Torah. They became one, Yisrael, Yoraita, the Kutshabrihu Kazu. Before Matan Torah, the Torah existed in a vacuum. It could exist by itself, and the world existed because of Torah. But it existed by itself after the Torah was given. In Lo Bristi Yomam V'Layla Chukko Shomayim V'Oreth L'Samti. If not for my Bris, Bris doesn't just mean the learning of Torah. It means the covenant, the Torah together with the Jew. If not for the Jew learning Torah, there would be a moment where no Jew learns Torah. The world would cease to exist. I the Torah still exists just because no Jew is learning it. But once the Torah was given, if the Jew is not connected to the Torah is no Torah. The Torah is only a Torah because the Jew learns the Torah. Because the Jews connected to the Torah. And if we could sever ourselves as a nation totally from the Torah, then the world would cease to exist. Because the Torah would cease to exist. Because the Torah is no longer in a vacuum. And therefore it's our Torah. And we are the ones who determine what Torah is. That's the way the Rabbanu Shalom wanted it. The same God who gave the Torah said, if you have doubts, if you have questions, then you go to the Sanhedrin and they'll decide by a majority vote what the Torah is. Not capriciously, Chas V'Shalom. Right, not up to everybody will have a town meeting and decide what halachas we'd like to have. It doesn't work like that. There are rules. The same Rabbanu Shalom who said that a majority vote says who the majority can be and who has a vote, right? And how you vote and what a say or what an opinion is, but if you follow the rules and you're the kind of person who's fit to be following those rules, then what you decide is Torah. And that makes Torah for all the world. The Torah is our domain. When did the Torah become our domain? On the seventh day of Stephen when it actually was given, or a day before? The answer is very simple, a day before. Why? Two reasons. One is, imagine if you were making a wedding, and you sent out invitations, you reserved the hall, the caterer, the band, the photographer, everybody was reserved. Sent out all the invitations, for the sixth day of Sivan. That's what God did. He sent out invitations that when the world was created, Yom HaShishi, he had planned and set up that the Torah would be given on the sixth day of Sivan. All of a sudden, God is so preparing, we're supposed to be ready by the sixth day of Sivan. Moshe Rabbeinu sees it's the fifth day of Sivan, they'll never be ready tomorrow. He goes to the Rabbanu Shalom, he says, Rabbanu Shalom, you can't give the Torah tomorrow. You gotta postpone it today. We're not ready. So now, if somebody called me up, I had making a wedding for my daughter, it's Hashem. And someone calls me up and says, listen, I looked at my invitation, I can't make it that day. Just postpone your wedding for another day. Well, you're out of your mind. The photographer, the caterer, the band, the hall, right? All the other guests. No, it's supposed to be this day. I should postpone it for you. Very nice. I'd love you to be there. Come to a Sheva Brothers. I can't postpone the chazan for you. Why the Rosh Hashanah Rabbeinu? Listen, you know, this has been said from before. There's a B'nai Israel around in this world. Right? I've been planning on this for the sixth day of Sivan, just the beginning of creation. You're not ready? No, you're not ready. Too bad. We're giving the Torah tomorrow. This is the day we said. Everybody's coming. What's the answer? Very simple. If my daughter called me up and said, Tati, listen, I see on the invitation it says the sixth day of Sivan is supposed to be my wedding. I can't be there. Right? Then I'm not going to tell her, listen, you know, it's too bad. The caterer's going to be there, the photographer's going to be there, the band's going to be there, and the hall is, I can't, we're going to go out with the chasna without you. It doesn't work, without the kala, there's no chasna. We're the kala. The Rosh Hashanah has no choice. On the sixth day of Sivan, it became evident that there's no Torah without us. We're not just guests. We're not just observers. We are the kala. And if the kala is not going to be there, there is no chasna. Beyond that, where did Moshe Rabbeinu get the power to tell the Rabbanu Shalom, listen Rabbanu Shalom, I know that you have set aside the date, I know you really want to give the Torah tomorrow, but we can't do that. We have to push her off another day. But Rabbanu Shalom agrees with us. Where did Moshe get that power? Because on the sixth day of Sivan, already potentially the Torah was ours. And in whose hands is it? Not Rabbanu Shalom anymore. Lo Bashomayim. In whose hands is the Torah? Gdolei Israel. The Gadol Hador says, we're pushing it off. Rabbanu Shalom has to say yes. You're the Gadol Hador, I gave the Torah to you. So the power that we had to push it off a day, and the fact that it was, the Rav Moshe was willing to push it off a day, all point to the fact that on the sixth day of Sivan already, the Torah became part and parcel of the Jewish people, and that's what Matan Torah was all about. So in order to prepare, we had to prepare ourselves to be able to be that kind of individual who can make the Torah part and parcel of themselves as an individual in Klal Yisrael. Could be for that reason, there are five minhagim on Shavuos, five different customs that we have. We'll see that each custom relates to another aspect of this preparation. The first custom is Megillas Rus. We read Megillas Rus on Shavuos. Why? Because Megillas Rus teaches us about this preparation. First, you have to work on your needles. Rus was fit to come into Klal Yisrael because she didn't have the needles of the men of Noah. Asher lo kidmu etchem b'lechem u'b'mayim. But she was a Baal Chesed. She had the kind of nidos that enabled her to convert and to embody Torah. Her name represents that, as far as say. Rus in Gematria is 606, added to the seven mitzvahs she already had, and the Bas Noah is 613. Her mitzvah, her name represents the 606 mitzvahs that she accepted. So Rus represents the fact that Torah has to become part and parcel of the Jewish people, of the Jew as an individual. And that's part of the preparation. That's the first preparation. The first preparation is prepare yourself. Prepare that derech eretz, those midos, shekodmo la-Torah. So when the Torah is going to be given, you'll be able to assimilate it. You'll be able to integrate it into yourself. That's the first facet of preparation. What's the second facet? In order for a person to assimilate the Torah, in order for a person to make himself one with the Torah one with him, he has to have a tremendous desire, a tremendous aspiration, a tremendous she'ima. If you don't want that, you'll never get it. A Shiva of Gifter explains, the Gemara says many times, more terminology. It says like this, pretty much. They're all the same ideas. Mazdik boy in the heavy chassid, the person who wants to be a chassid, should learn the laws of brachos and avos and zikin. Or harotza lahakim, yash, the person who wants to be a chacham, should daven towards the south. Harotza lahashir, yash, the person who wants to be rich, should daven towards the north. So Rosh Hashanah asks, the Gemara doesn't waste words. Why don't you say, Hamas Rinyaki, a person who davens to the south will become wise. Let's say a person who wants to become wise should daven to the south. Just tell me very simply, you daven to the south, you'll be wise. You daven to the north, you'll be rich. If you do these three things, you'll be a chassid. Why don't you say, whoever wants to be should do this? Why they repass it? Says Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Lita, if you don't want to be it, you can do everything and stand on your head and learn brachas and others and the zikin and daven 20 times a day to the south, you'll never be a chacham. You just have to want to be a chacham. First you have to have that desire. First you have to aspire. If you want something, then there are steps to take to be able to get it. But if you don't want it, you'll never attain anything. Beautiful medrash in Parshas Vayisorah. The medrash says that the Akiva was giving a drasha and his students began to see that things haven't changed too much in 2,000 years. Except if you really medayuk in the Medrash, there's a lot of big change. It's just that they wanted to go to sleep. They started to go to sleep. They weren't snoring and they weren't out completely where they needed to be revived. Right? There's one that they were still capable of hearing what he said, it's just they were at the verge of going into dreamland. So he wanted to wake them up. Here he was speaking to a bunch of people and they're all asleep. So he decided to wake them up with something fantastic. What did he say? Na'rosa Esther, Shemolcha, Al-Nayel, Yetzim, Yesheva, Medinos. What did Esther see that gave her the ability to rule over 127 provinces? The Tavo Esther, Batzita Shasori Menu, that Esther come, the great-great-granddaughter of Sori Menu, who lived 127 years, and she should rule over 127 provinces. So he all woke up, what the world is sorta with Esther have to do? And he went on. So the Mizrach Eliyahu said he wasn't just trying to tease them and said something fantastic, but he said other, more fantastic things to say. He was trying to tell them something. He said, why would Rabbi Akiva's students falling asleep? Because they thought to themselves, what Rabbi Akiva is talking about is so far above our heads. The levels that he's mentioning are so far beyond us. What are you listening to this book? It's not on our level. It's not for us. We'll never reach those things that he's talking about. It's way beyond what we can attain. So they went to sleep for a little while. When he starts to speak about something that's on our level, we'll glad they wake up. So Rabbi Akiva said, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Esther became Esther? Because she aspired her entire life to be like Sara Imenu, who lived 127 years completely, totally, every second. She was in control. She ruled. She was a queen over 127 years of seconds. Esther never reached that kind of royalty, but because she aspired to be an Esther, she at least attained an Esther. If you don't aspire to the greatest goal, if you don't aspire to the most lofty aspiration, then you'll never achieve anything. So don't think what I'm telling you is beyond you. It is beyond you. But if you don't aspire to those lofty goals, you'll never be able to bring out your own potential. And therefore, this aspire. You may not be a living Sefer Torah. Only Gdolei Yisrael may be living Sefer Torah Mamash. But at least you can be a living Parsha in the Torah. A living word in the Torah, a living letter in the Torah, something you'll be. But if you don't aspire to be a living sacred Torah, you'll never be anything. So the second part of the preparation is another aspect of Sefirat HaOmer. The Chinuch said that the idea of Sefirat HaOmer is the idea of aspiring. We count anxiously. My children now are in the midst of two counts. They're counting the Omer, and they're also counting the Gomer, right, when they'll finish school. They're already figured out. Right, how many days it is to the end of the year, and each day they count, Ayom Yom, Echot Yarboim Yom, Bohomer, and so-and-so day is like Gomer. Nope. They're looking, I know which one they count with greater fervor. No, I do know which one they count with greater fervor. But that's what I'm about saying. It's in the Kabbalah, every day it's safe for children are supposed to run away from school. That's the head of a child. Child is more than Tinochus and they run away from the Beit HaSefer. That's a problem. But a full Tinochus, which could bear. It doesn't say how old a Tinoch is. The Metinochus were 50, 60 years old, still also still running away from the Beit HaSefer. But for Tinochus who were still within the range of Tinochus, which could bear. But they, when you're looking forward to something coming, you count anxiously towards it. You aspire towards it. And that's what the Chinuch says, like an Eved HaShoei Pritzel, like a slave who's working in the hot sun, and the whole day is thinking, when am I going to have a minute's rest, take a coffee break, sit in the shade for a few minutes. That's how you have to aspire, that's how you have to long for Matan Torah. That's the second aspect of preparation. You want to assimilate the Torah and make it part of you, aspire towards that. Want it. Manchet boy, if you want it, it'll be. But if you don't want it, and you're aspiring to the highest goals, then you'll never achieve anything. But it's interesting. The way that we celebrate Shavuot, again, another aspect. We celebrate Shavuot on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu added. That extra day, why? Secondly, it always bothered me. What did they accomplish on one more day? Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, guys had 49 days of preparation, and they've been preparing and preparing for 49 days. At the end of the 49 days, Moshe said, listen, I get the feeling they're not ready yet. So guys said, okay, how many years do you need left? Moshe said, one more day. One more day. What in the world? One more day. What are they missing? What can they accomplish on one more day? They're ready in one more day. Let them be ready today. What's one more day going to do? But thinking, there was nothing that they were missing that they needed one more day. Moshe said, I see they don't really want it yet. They're not really aspiring. So when you're really counting towards something, and you get to the goal, and then it's pushed off for a little bit, not a lot, just one more day, delay. The she'ifa, the aspiration, the longing is doubled and tripled. Now you're chalashing for it. You're it was there, and now it's pushed off. It's like the carrot with the, they said in Miami, dog races. So they used to have a rabbit that used to run in front of the dogs, and just as they would get close, right, they would speed up the rabbit. The rabbit was a mechanical rabbit. When they speed up the rabbit, and the dogs are running even faster. So when you push something away a little bit more, it's just within reach, and then out. The longing, the aspiration, is geometrically increased. That's what they need. They need to long for the Torah. And that extra day of longing, that one extra added day, that's what we celebrate. The culmination, the epitome, the intensity of she'ifa, of longing. We count, however, different than my children are counting, which is also important. My children are counting down towards the end of school, right? 30 days, 29, 28, 27, that's how normally you count down to an important day, a countdown. NASA's space program doesn't count up to their launching. They count down to the launch. Why don't we count down? Why don't we start on pace up? There are 50 days, 49 days left yet to this era, 48, 47, 46. That's what I'm speaking about. I was thinking there's a very big difference. When you count down, then it's only the goal that's important. All you want to do is get these days out of the way so you can get to your goal. These days are not important. Right? If somehow these days would disappear and they would finish school tomorrow, they'd be happy. Right? So get these days out of the way. So we want them to go down, down, down. Not important, just get them out of the way. But as we said, these days are crucially important. If you don't prepare for Matan Torah, you can't get to your aspiration. You need to work on it. It's a daily schlav, a daily rung on a ladder before you get to the top of the ladder. It's not just the time has to pass. You have to be prepared, you have to prepare. Today is one day of preparation, and 2 days of preparation, and 3 days of preparation. Another interesting factor about Sfirah, we count the days before the day comes. We count it tonight. Tonight is 41 days in the open. Not 41 days yet, it's the beginning of the 41st day. But they've got 23 more hours, whatever it is. We have 23 and some odd hours left until it will actually be a complete 41st day. But we count the day in the beginning, as if to say, this is the beginning of the 41st day. That's the case, why don't we count the weeks like that? We count the weeks at the end of the week. After 7 days pass, we say, this is 1 week, but it's not. It's already the beginning of the second week. Right, this day is already the end of the week. What we should do, if we want to make it parallel, is at the beginning of the week say, this is one day of the Omer, which will be 1 week. It's the beginning of 1 week, just like the beginning of 1 day is when we count it. Why don't we count the beginning of 1 week? Why do we wait to count the weeks in the end and the days in the beginning? I haven't seen anybody who asked the question, of course, the question. Could be the answer is also very simple. In aspiring towards a goal, you have to have tremendous, tremendous aspirations. You have to have a sulam musav aris kavarosho matiya shamayim. You have to have a ladder whose head is in the heavens. But it has to be musav aris, so it has to be on the ground, grunt. You have to count day by day. You have to have short-range goals. You have to have a program. How am I going to get to the top of the ladder? Not just have a she'ifa, I long to be a tzaddik, a living sacred Torah. Okay, have you done anything about it? No, I'm waiting, longing. It's not going to help. It's going to be a long time. A living sacred Torah, which is long. So what do you have to do? I have to do something. I want to be a living sacred Torah. I work on my needles. I'll start with one needle. I'll start on one little bit of Torah. And little by little, I'll go up that ladder that's firmly planted on the ground until I get to the top, or as far up as I can go. In order to check and see if you're really getting anywhere, you're not just aspiring towards this ethereal, esoteric goal that has no pragmatic meaning to it. Every once in a while, you have to look down and see if you're any higher than you were a few days ago. So at the end of the week, we look back and see, have we accomplished something? We every day look forward to accomplishing. At the end of 7 days, we look back in retrospect and we see, have I accomplished anything? Have I got anything? So spiritual only represents both the concept of aspiring and longing toward the loftiest goal of Matan Torah and making the Torah part of you. At the same time, it represents a program, a pragmatic, practical program of wrong after wrong, every day doing something that will help me reach towards that long-range goal in a short-range way, and giving me a chance every week to look back in retrospect and see, Taka, if I've gotten anywhere. Have I accomplished a week's worth of serious homework? For that reason, the counting of the Omer is connected to the Omer sacrifice. Another aspect, another idea. Torah has many, many facets, but they're all true. Everything I've done is true, but all the facets of Torah are true. Some things are not facets of Torah, but they seem to have an idea behind them here. Another fact is why the counting of the Omer is connected to the Korban HaOmer. Again, the Korban HaOmer permitted us to eat the new crop, something that's new. A person is excited about it. He longs for it. Right? Last year's grain, not last year's, but this is a new, improved grain. Right? All you have to do is change the packaging on a detergent and say new, improved. Everybody buys it. It's the same old garbage that was in there before. Right? But the package is new and improved. So now people buy it. Doesn't clean the clothes any better. It costs a few cents extra. But new, improved. New already is. That's a finish. That's something I want. It's a new variety. The new thing. Change the label on the soda bottle, it's the same soda that was there before. It looks different, the bottle looks different. No! No already is it. Kosher. It's exciting. Something that I aspire to. Just as much as a person aspires to eat that new crop, that's how much you have to aspire to your new Torah that you're going to get this coming year. I celebrated Shavuot last year, or that, and you heard this drasha before and before and before, but that's the custom of drinking milk on Shavuot. Why milk? So one idea could be based on a medrash. The medrash says that Torah is compared to water and we're compared to fish. The Yidgul Arov the Keratoris. The medrash says when it rains, fish go to the top of the pond to grab the raindrops. You think that fish have enough water? They're not running out of water. Well, they have to grab the raindrops. It says that Rav Moshe put a special nature into a fish. That if a fish would get tired of water, right? Everywhere, water everywhere. So that's enough water already. I want to take a vacation. I'll go somewhere else. There's no water. The fish would take a vacation. Never come back. Right? He'd be buried. That would be the end of the fish. The fish needs water to exist. So the Rav Moshe Shalom gave the fish a special nature. That every drop of water it tastes different than a drop before. Every drop, it tastes a different taste. And a new drop of water that's coming from the sky, the fish grabs the taste, another raindrop. They've never saw water before. And the Medrash said the same thing the Rav Moshe put into another creature, called a baby. Okay? Imagine if you had to eat your favorite food for breakfast, lunch, supper, in-between meal snack, every day for weeks and weeks and months on end. Right? Imagine, whatever it is, it could be the most delicious food. But after a few days, you'd be disgusted. You wouldn't want to look at it anymore. You don't want to hear about it anymore. And here's this poor little baby. What do? Right? It doesn't get one day fish, and one day steak, and one day hamburgers. No, it gets milk. And what it gets for lunch? More milk. And supper? More milk. And in between meals, snacks? More milk. You think the kid, after a few days, would say, well, this is it. Put me back in the womb. Right? I can't take this anymore. Right? Give me something to eat. Ribbono Shel Olam, I came into this world to drink milk, I can't take it anymore. That's a diet. So why doesn't the baby go outside and say, well, you give me a steak, I don't drink anymore. That's the thing. The baby, Baruch Hashem, continues and continues months upon months, only on a diet of milk. It's just a medrash because the Ribbono Shel Olam is the same favor for the baby. And the baby's not capable of drinking anything else or eating anything else. He needs that milk because he gets disgusted of it. Because he's so familiar with it, he won't be able to live. So every drop of milk tastes different to that baby. That's why we drink milk on Shavuos. We received Torah last year, and the year before that, and the year before that, another Shavuos. The same thing again. The same Kriyas HaTorah, and the same Inhagim, and the same milk system. But that's just it. Remember, when you were a baby also, everything was repeated over and over and over again. Still you had a Shukah. Still you had a Sheifa. You still long for that milk again. Why? Every milk had a different taste. So too, the Medrash said. The Rav Moshe gave us the ability, every five Torah, every bit of different Torah that you hear, has a new taste, a new time, like you never heard different Torah before, like you never heard that before. have to find a new taste in it, because we get tired of the Torah. Rachmanu L'shlam, we can't live. So it could be for that reason we drink milk, milchik, and shavuos, to remind us of this idea of she'ifa, aspiration, of finding joy and newness and a tremendous amount of that which we can enjoy and find desirable in Torah. We reach now the third aspect of preparation. The third aspect of preparation. You want to make the Torah part of you, and you have to desire that. But now you can work it. Now you need omel and yikir. It doesn't come easy. It doesn't happen by sitting in an easy chair, sipping a lemonade with an art scroll, a chumash in your hand, and perusing through. That's not omel the yikir. That's not the way that you learn Torah, and that's not the way you do mitzvahs. It involves a certain amount of toil, a certain amount of work, of busying yourself, of tiring yourself in Torah, and without that, there is no Torah. It's not just without that you don't reach the highest levels. Without that, the Torah becomes distorted. We read in Resnick's Parsha, in the Ukot Saikeleichu, Sheyeyu Amelei Batorah. If you walk in my Tukim, and the concept of walking is being one with the Ribbono Shel Olam, finding the Ribbono Shel Olam, walking together with him, constantly towards the goal. You don't take it easy. You're constantly moving. Then that's stagnant. If you don't learn Torah with Omel and Yegiyah, then in Losish Muli, you don't hear the Ribbono Shel Olam. You see it only peripherally. You don't see what's in the Torah. There's two levels of Torah. There's Lishmoa Likol Hashem. There's listening to God's voice. And there's Lishmoa Bikol Hashem, to listen into God's voice. What are the implications of the Torah? And unless you put in the Omel and Yegiyah, you won't find that which the Torah implies. You'll only see the surface. You'll only see that which is peripheral. You won't understand the Torah in its real meaning. And we'll see in 1 second what happens when you don't understand the Torah in its real meaning. What happens, what kind of mitzvahs, and what kind of Torah that becomes. Rashi says on the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara says Torah is a sanchayim l'maininim bar and a samlokit l'masmilim bar. Torah is a elixir of life to those who deal with it from the right and those who deal with it from the left. It is a sam hamovish. We're not talking about politics. Torah for the right people is a sam achayim. For the lefties, it's a sam hamovish. What does that mean? Rashi said, well, my meaning, bro, not my meaning with an aleph, my meaning with two yods, people who deal with it from the right. My meaning means, ke'odam ha'toreyah v'yad yemino shehu ha'ikr, as a person who busies and toils and bothers himself with his right hand, where he can put his full strength into it. The haunting soldier to know the secret of Torah. What's the secret? There's some dark, mysterious secret of the Torah that hidden behind all the Torah, you have to use your right hand to get into that secret. Right, Torah isn't a secret. The secret of Torah is understanding it the way it's supposed to be understood, not distorting it. It's interesting, the reward for him to Kosai Teleku, if you'll toil in Torah, as opposed to Losish Muli, you won't listen to me. You'll learn Torah, but only peripherally, and then you won't see me in the Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam said. You'll have a Torah, but it's not a godly Torah anymore. It's a substitute Torah, which we'll see in 1 second what that is. What's the reward? The Nasafi Gishneichem Be'itam. I'll give you rain in the proper time. Now, why was that? The first bracha that the Ribbono Shel Olam said, I'm going to tell you something. If you keep the Torah perfectly, you know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to make it rain in the proper time. You won't get wet. Right? It's not going to come on times when you're outside to see Leil Revi'i and Leil Shabbos, when people aren't outside anyway, and I promise you, you won't get rained on. That's the biggest brother you can think of. Right? That's all the Ribbono Shel Olam tell us. You keep the Torah perfectly, I make sure you don't get rained on. I mean, a nice brother. It's never rained on. It's such a big deal. Because when it rains in the proper time, then the air is clear. And the streams of the brooks are clear. And a person is healthy. And when a person is healthy, then the whole world is right. That is the source. When the atmosphere is pure, when the rains come at their proper time, then there's no pollution. and the world pure and clean and a person's healthy, that's the key to all brachas. That's what Torah learning is. When you learn Torah properly, that's the geshem, that's the rain that keeps away the pollution. It makes the air clear. It makes you a healthy, spiritual person. But you have to put in the effort in learning Torah. Why? Because again, yogati matzati. To find the divinity in Torah, you need to put in effort. Then the Rabbi Shalom gives you a divine Torah. But if you think you can learn Torah with your own mind, you can. But it's not Torah. It's only chokh. It's only the peripheral wisdom of Torah. But you don't find the Rabbi Shalom in that Torah. And how much can Torah be distorted? We tell you two distortions of Torah. For Allah, then easy carry, the Prophet said. You know what will happen if you don't learn Torah? With Omo and Yigiyah, with toil, with bother, putting your everything into it, making it the main thing in your life, putting your entire brain into it, your concentration into it. You know what will happen? For Allah, then easy carry. You'll walk with me. You'll do mitzvahs. You'll learn Torah. But it'll be superficial. It'll be peripheral. Mitzvah Hashem Kulumada. You'll do the mitzvah in such a peripheral, superficial way that you'll distort them. Well, the mitzvah will become up with the soul. How can a mitzvah become up with the soul? I'll give you two examples. Look at Yerushalayim. You have to know how to look at Yerushalayim. How to celebrate Yerushalayim. Beit HaMikdash can be coming up with a soul, huh? The Gemara says in the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, they used to have races up the ramp to the altar to decide which Kohen would merit to have the skill of serving the Rabbanu Shalom through the sacrificial rites of that day. So two Kohanim were neck and neck, the Gemara said, just about to get to the finish line, the top of the bath, and the other one sees that his friend is getting the edge on him. So he does what any self-respecting Kohen would do, who wants to serve the Rabbanu Shalom and sacrifices, pulls out a knife and stabs the guy in the heart. And the guy falls off the kevesh, off the ram, and he's dying, not dead yet, right? His father, the father of the victim, comes over, pulls out the knife from his son's heart, and he proclaims to the Kohanim and the Beit HaMikdash, don't worry, I got the knife out before he died, it's still pure, pure. It's still ritually pure. Malami the Gemara says that the purification of the utensils is more important to this guy than going to some point. So what does that mean? This is really great. He's a really Hashem Shemayim. You can kill somebody to do a Oda Hashem, and that must be really, must really want it. Like, that's real kanos. That's real zealousness. Right? As many people you can murder, that really shows you're a real Tuma person. What's going on with them? The answer is that they submit this. They came in out with a sword. They did the mitzvah superficially. They didn't find the Rabbanu Shalom of the mitzvah. They worshiped the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash became an Avodah Zarah. I think I want to mention here, but it's very pertinent, it's very much clearer. Once had a Baba Boss in Miami, an older man, and he was, Baruch Hashem, healthy. What you could see, he was healthy. He walked around, he wasn't bedridden, he didn't seem sickly, but he had a certain sickness, certain condition, that if he was fast on Yom Kippur, right, his doctor told him that his life would be in danger. So he told him, you have to eat regular on your kippur. Not even the shiurim, not just little amount. You have to eat regular. Because if you don't eat regular meals on your kippur, you are putting your life in danger. So he went home and he told his wife, the doctor told me today if I don't eat on your kippur, right, my life is in danger. But the doctor can do what he wants, but I'm not eating on your kippur. His wife wanted to keep her husband around for a little while, Baruch Hashem. She called me up and she said, my husband just came home from the doctor. The doctor told him if he doesn't fast on your, if he fasts on your kippur, he's endangering his life. He's not listening to the doctor. He's going to fast on your kippur. He has to be talking to the Rabbanu Shalom. Right? He doesn't care what the doctor says. I said, can you do something? I don't want to lose my husband. So I called him in to my office. And I, prior to that, checked with another doctor who I trusted. I called the first doctor, found out the situation. I told the second doctor what the circumstances were. He concurred 100%. If this guy doesn't eat regularly, his life is in danger. Called him in and listen. I heard from your doctor, I heard from your wife, I heard from the second doctor that if you don't eat on your kippur regularly, then you are endangering your life. So I'm telling you, how long is you have to eat? The guy looks me straight in the eye and says, Rabbi, you're a young man. Still a young man. No more wife. And he said, I'm about four times your age. Don't tell me what to do. He said, I, from the time that I'm bar mitzvah, haven't eaten on Yom Kippur, and I'm not starting now. That's it. Look,
I said, okay, you're right. You're a lot older than me. Hard for me to tell you what to do. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm in charge of the shul. I may not be able to tell you what to do, but I can tell the gabbai what to do. And as soon as you leave this office, I'm going to call the gabbai of the shul, and I'm going to tell him to strike your name from his list of people with him, because you are never to get another honor in this shul. He says, on what planet? I said, because you're an idolater. You're an Okinawa scholar. He looked at me like I'm out of my mind. He said, what did I do? I said, look, in this shul, we made the Mekel and here's Mechal Shabbat Aliyah, but we never gave an idol worshiper an Aliyah in the shul. And you're an idol worshiper. He looked at me, what are you talking about? So I said, okay. I said, my God, I said, you should eat on your kid. Your God has a different name. My God has a lot of names. What if his name's not Yom Kippur? You have a God who you call Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur told you to fast. I don't care if your God's called Molech, or Kamosh, or Zeus, or Jupiter, or Yom Kippur. Don't make a difference what your name of your God is. My God said you should eat. Your God said you should fast. So obviously, you're worshiping a different God than I am. So you're an idol worshiper. And idol worshippers don't get kibbutz in the shul. The mighty ate them. Fine. But that's the truth. When the Beit HaMikdash becomes an idol, and Yom Kippur can become an idol, if you don't understand, there are bonus ones as part of the Torah. And even Yerushalayim can become an idol. How? There's a pasuk in last week's parasha that's phenomenal. Pasuk says like this. The Rav Hashem said that part of the Tzokhosa, as part of the rebuke of the terrible tragedies that will occur to Klal Yisrael, if they don't keep the Torah properly, if they don't toil in learning Torah, will be the following. I will send the sword against you. There's going to be wars. V'netzachtem el oreichem. You will be gathered into your city. Then v'shilach v'devar v'tovachem. Then I'll stand a place. V'netzachtem v'ad oyeh, you'll be handed over into the hands of your enemy. So how does all these things fit together? First there's war, then they're in their city, then there's a plague, then they're in the hands of the enemy. How does all this fit together? Says Rashi, what happened is like this. A war comes. So you run to Yerushalayim, which is a walled city, to protect yourself. So everybody's in Yerushalayim, and the enemy can't get in. You're safe. Then, Yishilach is devil to go with them. I'm going to make it safe. People are going to die in Yerushalayim. There is a halacha, Ein Malinim Et HaMet Yerushalayim. You can't leave a dead body overnight in Yerushalayim. You can't leave it there, you can't bury it there, you must get it out of the city and bury it outside the city, out of the walled city. So you're going to take the body out of the city to bury it. And when you do that, the enemy will get you. They're standing there waiting for you. And you're going to be put in the hands of your enemy. Think for a second. First of all, this halacha of Ein Malinim Et HaMet Yerushalayim is not a Torah halacha. It's a rabbinic halacha. That's a binder of a mile in Yerushalayim. Nowhere the Torah is going to say you can't bury people in Yerushalayim. So it's a binder of an if that. Most certainly, it doesn't take precedence over life. Just as much as Shabbat doesn't take precedence over life. So here are people who are going to give up their lives not to bury a person in Yerushalayim, when they know that leaving the city puts their lives in danger. Who are these people? Okay, maybe they're good tzaddikim, right? These are people who are willing to put their lives in danger for the smallest mitzvah of Rabbanan. Who are these people? These are the people who lived in the time when the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, who Chazal say were Ofei Avodah Zarah, Megalei Arayot, and Shomrei Gan. They were murderers, adulterers, and idolaters. And they're Moser Nefesh, friend. This is Rabbanan. To put their lives in danger. But that's the focus of it. No, Milo. That's the problem. They made Yerushalayim into Avodah Zarah. You shouldn't put your life in danger. Stay there. Bury the guy in Yerushalayim. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim is not important as human life. That's holy if Yerushalayim is holy and important, because the Torah said it's holy and important. Because the Rabbanu Shalom said. So the Rabbanu Shalom also said, in a time of danger to life, forget about Yerushalayim. Forget about the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. Bury the people in Yerushalayim. Because Pikuach Nefesh Tocha Kol HaTorah Kula. That's the Rabbanu Shalom's Torah. But when I make Yerushalayim into a god, and again, let's make a difference what you call your god. You call him up your Kippur, you call him Yerushalayim, you can call him Shabbat, you can call him Beard, you can call him whatever you want. But once there's something besides Torah, and it's not the Torah that's governing anymore, it's Yerushalayim that governs, it's Yom Kippur that governs, then that's not what is Zohar, then it becomes idolatry. If you don't learn Torah, the soul and the key, you don't learn Torah to understand soul, the secret of Torah, the revelation of them in the Torah, what the Torah wants from you, then the Torah becomes something peripheral, and the Torah itself can become a Hotzah. The Torah itself can be an idol. Because it's not the Rabbanu Shalom in the Torah that you see. It's the Torah as an entity of itself that you see. In this respect, shmita has a very interesting implication. The Gemara said that people who are involved in agriculture had to work a whole year, but 2 months out of the year, they really were busy. In Arbor and Elul, those were the times of planting and harvesting, then had time to learn the Kalah. That doesn't mean they didn't learn at all. They had some time, an hour or two a day, to learn. But they really couldn't learn with toil, with putting their everything into it. They were knocked out from being in the fields most of the day. So those 2 months, they learned, but they didn't learn with toiling in the field. So in 6 years, how many months are there? 12 months, 1 full year. So Torah says, okay, now from Shemitah, make up for those 2 months a year you didn't learn toil. And spend an entire year toiling in the Torah to make up for those 2 months in the last 6 years, every year, that you didn't. And that's why it says, when it comes to Shemitah, the pasuk of Yibore Koach, Hosting Devarah, the people of strength who can do the Rabbanah Shalom's will, they're strong people who can toil in Torah for a year, Lishmoah Bekol Devarah, who can hear into what the Rabbanah Shalom wants, not just what he says, but what he means, what the implications are, what it's really all about. Not Mitzvah Fanashim Mulumada, not just peripheral, surface mitzvahs. What's the mitzvah really telling you? What's the mitzvah of Rabbanah in that mitzvah? Where's the Rabbanah in that Torah? That's what comes from toiling in Torah. Let me tell you one more thing. And this I couldn't find if I ever said here or not. If I did, could I say again? And if I didn't, I'll say it again some other time. Because I hold that it should be framed in every home. Rashi says in last week's parasha something that has to do with Omel and Yekiah. We're talking about Omel and Yekiah learning Torah. But there's Omel and Yekiah observing Torah. And this applies to Balabatim even more than learning with toil. That also applies to Balabatim. The Rambam says a Balabas, not a Yeshiva person, which is Torah, so Nasa, we have to learn Torah all the time. But a Balabas, what's a Balabas? A Balabas who works 3 hours a day and can only learn 9 hours a day, the Rambam says, right? Regular Balabite, right? So he should set up his day as follows. That's a Balabite, right? Balabite of Yeshiva life should be Balabas, right? In the Rambam's term. So a Balabas also could learn, could also learn with tremendous toil. Tremendous toil. There was something more relevant to a Balabayit, and it's relevant to Yeshiva like that, it's relevant to all of us. But it doesn't seem to be relevant at all. It seems to be so unrealistic that it doesn't seem to make sense. As Rashi said, the person who doesn't approach Torah with awful and idea, with a tremendous amount of toil and bother, and to put in everything into it, thinks 7 levels, one lower than the other, until the last level is that he denies the existence of God. If you don't learn with Amal and Yekiah, then you don't do the mitzvahs. If you don't do the mitzvahs, then you begin to hate other people who do the mitzvahs. After that, you begin to hate the Chachamim. After that, you try to make other people stop doing the mitzvahs. After that, you deny the validity of the mitzvah. And finally, you deny the validity of the Rabbanah. 7 levels. Doesn't seem to really be realistic. I know a lot of people who don't really put their everything into keeping Torah. It's very convenient for them. They keep a very laissez-faire kind of Yiddishkeit. Right. What's convenient they do, what's not convenient they don't do. And they're not kofer v'ikar. They don't deny the existence of God. They don't deny the existence of mitzvahs. They're not such terrible people. They're plain ordinary kumah yidden. They're a good portion of Torah and stuff like that. So what's Rashi talking about? It doesn't seem to hold water. And if you're going to tell me, well, they haven't gotten to that point yet. Wait another year or so. It doesn't seem that they ever get to that point. What does this mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means something so realistic that it applies to all of us. All of us. I know it applies to me. I assume it applies to other people. What does it mean in either case? You have a person who says, look, I found my niche in Yiddishkeit, right, and I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with my level of Judaism. This is how much I do, this is how much I don't do. I'm Mahadra, not Mahadra, Minna Mahadra. I'm just Mahadra, Minna Mahadra, but not Mahadra, Minna Mahadra, Minna Mahadra. Right? I have this level of Kashrus, and this level of Kliyas, and this level of Shabbat, and that doesn't bother me. I reach the level I want to be on, and then make waves. Right? Don't push me to change. No, I found what makes me comfortable. I have to be comfortable. I don't have to be upset and not comfortable. Comfortable, to be comfortable at a tremendously high level, but I'm comfortable. I don't want to hear anything more. Like a person, right, that keeps Shabbos, Shomer Shabbos. He doesn't want to know about all the intricacies of Shabbos. He keeps Shabbos because he knows it. he knows in the back of his mind that he once heard this halacha boris. Now you have to, what's it called, watch how you eat your fish on Shabbat, you put the bones in the fish, or the fish in the bones, and with your hand, with a kli, with a... I don't want to know from that. I just want to be comfortable, eat my fish in peace. Right? I don't want to know from these things, so I pretend I don't know that. Okay? I reach my niche, I'm a shamashah, I don't drive, I don't turn on the lights, I don't enter the phone, what do you want? I'm a shamashah. Good, you're shamashah. So that's it. So he's not at all no and you're gay and intolerant. He's not interested in putting that extra measure in. He's not interested in doing something that's uncomfortable. He's not interested in changing and growing constantly. He wants to remain stagnant. After all, I'm happy with the level that I've reached. I don't want to do any more. I do enough. Sounds familiar. Okay. Now, people don't like to feel guilty. So the first thing the person has to do if he wants to maintain that kind of lifestyle is not to learn too much. Because if you learn too much, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to feel guilty. You start going to shiur and another Shabbos, then one day you're going to get the boredom. And you're going to start learning, you have to worry about your fish and your bones and that. And you're going to go home and you're going to feel guilty. I don't want to feel guilty. So I will avoid shiurim on another Shabbos. You want to teach me a shiur, after spirits, and how the bonus on the world, and what's it called, and what happens to dead people after that. I'll learn, and that I'm willing to listen to. It doesn't bother me, it doesn't threaten me, but not Shabbos. Shabbos I'm interested in hearing about. That's all the balance. Okay. So the guy goes his merry way, and he eats his fish out once through Shabbos after Shabbos. Until one Shabbos, his friend invites him for Friday night. Okay. Goes to his friend's house, they serve the fish. And his friend sits there and starts to think to himself, how can I eat this fish? Should I take the bones from the fish from the bones? And he's sitting there thinking about the fish for 5 minutes before he's eating it. And this guy's polishing away. Because he realizes now, when the voice was in the back of his mind, he feels guilty. He knows he really should be doing the same thing. Now he feels guilty. So he has two choices. He can be honest with himself and say, you know, I really should be doing that too. And I better learn the halachas, because that's really what should be. Or he can ease his conscience another way. Everyone feel guilty. There's two ways to ease your conscience. Do it right, or find a soothing of the conscience. How do you soothe your conscience? That's the next level down. You don't learn, so you don't do properly. You don't do properly, the next stage is you begin to hate. You begin to be disgusted with the people who do those things. Where about me? That guy's a chnyok. He's a buffoon. He's black. There's a million words. He's a fanatic. Right? All those words were created to soothe a person's conscience. Because if he's off the wall, a fanatic, black, chnyok, buffoon, then I don't feel guilty anymore. I don't want to do all those things. I just want to be normal. I just want to keep Shabbos normally. I don't want to keep Shabbos like some kind of cool. He's a cook, so he's watching his fish, thinking, bones, that's my sugar. I want to be normal. I want to keep Shabbos like a normal person. So I don't feel guilty anymore because of the sugar. Even the world, I'm not looking to be a sugar. Good, so I soothe my conscience by going down one level, knowing about Harry Moses. I'm disgusted with the people who keep the mitzvah the way that I'm not interested in keeping it because I'm comfortable. Okay, that helps for a while. Until the next day I go to shul. I'm sitting there in shul and the rabbi gets up to give his drasha. And that Shabbat the rabbi decides to give his drasha on the hilchos of boris. Everybody should try to intensify the shmirah Shabbat. Boris is a different malacha, and the rabbi spent 20 minutes explaining all of the boris. The guy's squirming in his seat. What in the world? I deserve this course. And now he really feels guilty. What about a shul really feeling guilty? So he has two choices. He can give in and say, maybe I should learn the halachos of boris right now. Or he can come to the next soothing of the conscience. The next way out. The next level down. What is that? Someya Tachakon. He begins to hate from Mide Hakon. What does that mean? Right? I can't say, okay, I might go off the wall. He's a chnyok, he's not broken. Or I have to inside believe that he knows what he's talking about. He's talking about the Allah. Look! Here's the big part. I should listen to that mouth. He's a politician. He never said hello to my grandmother 50 years ago one day. And I'll never let him forget that. I should accept anything from that kind of mouth. Now he's in it for the money. He's not in it for the money. He's in it for the politics. He's not a good enough politician. Whatever you want. So many of the Chachamim, the next stage down to soothe my conscience is, I have to repudiate the Talmidei Chachamim. They don't know what they're talking about. And even if they do know what they're talking about, I don't want to hear from them. They are talking. Okay, that helps us until our next point. The next point is, not everybody doesn't listen to the rabbi. There are people around you, all of a sudden you're good friends. And you see that they're all talking about how they ate their fish the night before. Right? Everybody's talking about it. challenge more children's voters, or apply to stocks, and then now it applies to pants, and then children's clothing. God, I can't make all those friends in the office. They're not all fuckproof. They're not all off the wall. They're all my friends. Now what do I do? That one guy before I could say, but now I can't repudiate them all. Now I'm stuck. What's the next level down to ease my conscience? The next level is Momea et Acheri Milasos. I try to prevent other people from doing the mitzvah. I become a one-man crusader, right? Don't do this! You realize what's happening? Today it's border. Tomorrow your wife's gonna shave her head. Don't do it! You're gonna become black! No. So I become a crusader to make sure that nobody does anything more than I do. To make sure that I feel comfortable. You can convince some people, but you can't convince them all. So you're stuck. Here's all these people around you who are now being medoptic in a mitzvah that they weren't before, and you know you really should deep down, and you feel guilty. So how do you ease your conscience? The next level down. The next level down is kofer the mitzvah. That sounds really strong. I deny the validity of the mitzvah. It's not so strong, you know what it means? The guy says, yeah, okay, but that's just one sheet. That's just the chumrah. Those are words that were created to ease people's consciences. Borei, I know, but that's a chumrah. I don't have that chumrah. Right, somebody once told me, don't have a chumrah driving a Shabbos. They're not mine. Chumrah. Once it's a chumrah, make them. Chumrah, I don't think it's chumrah. I just want to keep that awesome. So I'll make them, that's okay. I don't keep borei. It's one sheet, there must be somebody who argues. Everybody's about everything. There must be another sheet. There must be another opinion. I don't know who it is, but I assume somebody is. And look hard enough to find somebody else who says, okay. So that's called the mitzvah. I don't agree it's a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. It's a mini. Right? Someone wants to tell me they don't talk to their kids, that's not their mini. Okay, that's your mini. That's their goal. The mini, the chumrah, the peshita, only one person holds like that. All those are words that were created to be kofar the mitzvah. Not a mitzvah. I deny the fact it's a mitzvah. That helps until somebody comes along with a shulchan aruch, black and white, and shows you there's no other opinion. It's there. It's a melacha d'oraisa. You're chayav chatas. You're chayav skila if you're over on the isra korim. Here it is. There's no other opinion. It's black and white. What's the only avenue left? The only way out now to prove your conscience? No, it's such a mitzvah. I can't believe it. What does that mean, no, it's a mitzvah? No, it's a mitzvah means that the mitzvah, the commander, isn't all that important. If I believe it's a mitzvah already, and I'm not all that important in doing it, then obviously the one who commanded that mitzvah is not all that important. That's kofar belief. At that point, I deny the fact that the one who wrote it is the ikkar, that he's important, because what he said will be non-important. And that's the lowest level. And the truth is, a person can be a shomer Torah mitzvah, from with a strimal, with a kapata, medoctic, in 99.99% of everything. But the 1% thing that he's comfortable in and doesn't want to improve, he could be a culprit. And it applies to all of us. All of us are fine from the people. But there's those areas that we like to feel comfortable, and we want to know whether it's Russian horror, whether it's sneer, whether it's difficult part of the color. And everybody gets a different difficult part. For some people, one part's easy and another part's difficult. And for somebody else, the opposite is true. But in the area that's difficult, and we're not willing to put in the omel and yigiyah, the toil and trouble and discomfort of keeping something that's not comfortable, then you're on one of those levels down until kofar b'ikar. And it's not all as clear and black and white as it seems in the beginning, but it's 100% true. That kind of kofar b'ikar, that kind of somni et hachachamim applies to everybody. Everything. That's the importance of this preparation for Torah, of putting in the work, putting in the toil and the bottle. And therefore, we count for the Omer again. Why? What was the Omer? The Omer signified, now you can start harvesting. You know how much Omer and Yehiyah, how much work went into the harvesting, and then the, what's it called, the threshing and the grinding, until finally you got something out of that? The Omer signified, now start working. You planted, you plowed, you put a lot of work into the preparation, but now really the work comes if you want to eat. So we count in our preparation to the Omer, so we should know that if you want to prepare for Shavuot, you have to put as much work as they're putting in the field into your Torah and to your mitzvahs. And that could be the reason why we do two customs on Shavuot. One is that we bring green fruit, branches into the home and into the shul. Because in order to get fruit, you have to put a lot of work in. It just doesn't come by itself. If you don't plant and plow and fertilize and harvest and do all the other things that are necessary, you'll never have fruit to eat. If you don't put the work into it. If you don't want to get the fruit out of Torah, if you don't want to get the benefit out of Torah, if you don't want to get the soul, the secret out of Torah, then you have to put a lot of hard work into it if you want to get that benefit. And another thing we do is tikkun leil shavuos. We stay up all night, Shavuos night, preparing for the giving of the Torah. I once heard a nice word from Rabbi Elzad in Bnei Brak, in Yeshivas Magid Torah. I couldn't remember where I heard it now. I remember just now where I heard it from. Somebody told it over to me. He said a very nice word. He said, the first Shavuos night, the Jewish people went to sleep. The night before the Torah was given, they went to sleep. And the Rebbe tried to wake them up in the morning to give them the Torah. They overslept. So we make up for that. We correct it. We stay up all night. He said, how could they go to sleep that night? I mean, our ancestors were great people. How could they go to sleep the night before giving the Torah? He said, because they made a cheshbon like this, it made a lot of sense. Right? Tomorrow, God himself is coming to teach us a shiur. We want to be awake. We want to be refreshed. What's the best thing to do? Get a good night's sleep. So tomorrow morning, early in the morning, when the Rebbe will come to give us a shiur, we'll be awake. I give a shiur 5:30 in the morning. Right? Every day. Right? You can imagine, right, this one's head like this, this one's head like that, right, this one's thinking about who knows what, this one's still having this. You don't get a good night's sleep. So 5:30 in the morning, that's what time the Torah was given. Right? At night, at the crack of dawn, people are tired. So they said, well, let's get a good night's sleep. Right? And tomorrow morning, we'll be alert, we'll be awake, we'll be able to hear the Torah Hashem. They made a big mistake. That's very good. Torah is something that you can incorporate into your mental processes by normal means. But that's not Torah. Torah is your gati masasi. If you want the Rav Moshe to give you the real Torah, you want to get a present from the Rav Moshe, you have to put it in work. So even though naturally we say that the way to prepare for the Torah is to get a good night's rest, the truth is the way to prepare for the Torah is to say no all night. Because true, you may not have a clear cup, but you don't need a clear cup. The Torah is not something you get with your own faculties. The Torah is something the Rav Moshe gives you. And he'll give it to you on one condition. You put in the work, not to put it in. So even though under normal, natural terms, sleeping is the way to prepare, but not for Torah. For Torah, toiling and bothering yourself is the way to prepare. I was thinking, maybe our ancestors didn't do anything wrong. They didn't have the Torah yet. So what could they do? They went to sleep. That was the best way to prepare. We have the Torah already, so we have to stay up and learn. Not to get a good night's sleep. Once you have the Torah, the way to prepare for the Torah is by learning. In any case, there's one last preparation and one last question. And that is, in order to prepare for the Torah, a person has to work on making himself fit to amalgamate the Torah, assimilate the Torah. A person has to aspire towards that, and a person has to put in a lot of hard work. And the last thing that I want to speak about is a person has to understand how to unite himself with all other Jews. Unity is the key to Kabbalah Sotah. If you don't feel unified, if Klal Yisrael aren't together, then there can't be a Kabbalah Sotah. Klal Yisrael received the Torah that first Shavuos, Ki Ish Echad V'Lev Echad. As one person with one heart. It's not just a nice thing. Once in history, it was nice to have people prepared for Shavuos, the first Shavuos, and they got together. Very nice. It's a very commendable thing. It wasn't commendable. It was necessary. It was mandatory. It couldn't be any other way. For a few reasons. Only one or two of them. One is, you can't receive the Torah of 613 mitzvahs alone. You can only receive it if you're unified with the entire Jewish people. Why? Because no one individual, no matter who he is, no matter how holy he may be, can keep 613 mitzvahs. Not because it's hard, because it's impossible. A Kohen has certain mitzvahs that a Yisrael can never do. So right away, if you're a Yisrael, you can't have 613 mitzvahs. So maybe the Kohen. But the Kohen has certain mitzvahs that he can't do, that only a Yisrael can do. A Kohen will never have the mitzvah if he can have them. He can have 50 firstborn children from 50 different wives, and none of them he can have them. But a Yisrael, he can have them. So that's one mitzvah a Kohen doesn't have. And there are many more. No, forget about Kohanim and Yisrael. How about men and women? No man in the history of the world has ever brought or ever will bring a korban yoledet, the sacrificial thing after you give birth. Not a mitzvah a man can do. Only a woman can do that mitzvah. And there obviously mitzvahs that only men can do, that no woman can enter. So unless you're a Kohen, a Levi, a Yisrael, a man, and a woman, all wrapped into one, which today may be possible. But under normal circumstances, that's very difficult. You don't have private mitzvahs. You only have a portion of the mitzvahs. So how do we say, not for the mitzvahs, but if we're ready to take 614 mitzvahs? Oh, which one of you was ready to take 614 mitzvahs? Some kind of freak? None of you could exist except the mitzvahs. Who are you fooling? None of you could do all my mitzvahs. What does the Rebbe Shalom want? We should unite like one person with one heart, and then, if we accept the Torah as one individual, it doesn't make a difference anymore if the arm doesn't miss it, the leg doesn't miss it, it's all part of the same body. As long as it's all part of the same body, even though different parts of the body have different parts, different mitzvahs, it's still one body, it's one entity. So the Klal Yisrael has 613 mitzvahs. But if we are not united, if we're fragmented, then we don't have 613 mitzvahs. Beyond that, the Rambam says the whole purpose of the Torah is to bring peace and unity to the world. And therefore, if that's the purpose of Torah, how in the world do we accept Torah if we're not unified and we're not at peace with each other? Beyond that, every Jew is another letter in the Torah. Yesh, Shishim, Reb, we also have the Torah. Every Jew has his part in the Torah. And the Torah is not complete unless every Jew is represented. And that's what the Chabad Chaim says. I think we said this in the past. In the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to make a very big circular dance for all the tzaddikim. I heard something from Balabas. I said this year in a moshav near us in Gimzu. And the Balabas, I remember his name, he said, very nice boy. He added to what the Chabad Chaim said, very nice. So it says in the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to make a circular dance for all the tzaddikim. And he's going to sit in the middle. And all the tzaddikim are going to point and say, this is the God that we waited for. So Chabad Chaim asked, and what is this, Rambam room? That's what the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to do in all the Chabad. And he's going to sit in the middle and all the tzaddikim are going to dance around the circle. Right? And the tambourines also. What's going on? Like, this is what all the Chabad is waiting for. Right? To dance in a circle around the Rebbeinu Shlomo. So Chabad Chaim says there's a tremendous lesson. What the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to show us is the following. In this world, there are many approaches, legitimate approaches, sorry. Many. There is this Hasidisha group and that Hasidisha group, and this Mishnagisha group and this Yeshiva and that Yeshiva. And there's this group that emphasizes davening, and this one emphasizes learning, and this one emphasizes Yudhis HaKadosh. They all have tariqnitzes. They all are man-month, the Torah Shabbat Sabbath, Torah Shabbat Tav. They believe in all the mitzvahs and believe in all the Ikrei Hadas. We're talking about legitimate approaches. There are illegitimate approaches to Torah, too. There's plenty of them. Plenty of them, but they're not uncertain. But legitimate approaches, just different flavors. Right, Howard Johnson could have 28 flavors. Cloudy Sorrow, but won't you have more flavors? The flavors are different approaches. And each one is necessary. Because the shleimus, the perfection of Cloudy Sorrow is not with any one individual. It's in the conglomeration of all of them together. But in this world, what happens? Each group thinks that the MS is only with it. Okay? And we all know that the Tells are there, the MS is there. But Lamaisa, but everybody thinks their derech is the emes derech, right? Everybody thinks foolishly that this derech is it, this is the way to God, and never other people have different looks, right? This yeshiva is emes, that was not the way. This chassidim, this misnagdim, this, everybody thinks that their way is it. Okay. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to show us what the law is. I'm going to show you something. So I'll put you all in a circle. And you could be here, and your counterpart 180 degrees, opposite. Like you didn't see eye and eye in this world. This one's there this way, and this was there completely different in the way they learned, the way they doubted, and the way they did mitzvahs. Completely different approach. Completely different. 180 degrees. So where's the Rebbeinu Shlomo? In the middle. And all the radii are equal. Same distance as the Rebbeinu Shlomo from all the way. And as Baal Bas said, it doesn't say the Rebbeinu Shlomo is going to make a circle. It says make a circular dance. And a dance, everybody keeps moving. So in the future, everybody's going to occupy the other space where the other person was. And everybody's going to be able to have a feeling of what it meant to be the other one's there. Right? I'll stand in this Hasidisha place, and that Hasidisha place, and the other Hasidisha place, and the other guy's going to stand in this Mishnagisha place, and each one will feel the sort of flavor of the other one. So in the future, all of us will benefit from all the different approaches. But in this world, you have to have one approach. We're limited in this world. So the only way you can have all the approaches is by uniting all of them together. Me with my approach, you with your approach. And that's when each one has to respect the other one's approach. We're mourning for the Talmidim of the Akiva. What did they do? Two things. The Gemara says, Shalom Noach was called the Sebesim. They didn't honor each other. And the Medrash says, Shahoyu and Nahum Torah the Torahsim. They were narrow in their learning of Torah one with the other, with their sharing of Torah. What it means is on their level, these were great people. They dealt with each other in a way that we wouldn't come to understand what it means to deal with another human being. Doesn't say Chas v'Shalom Shalom Shalom the Kovet. They dealt disrespectfully. It says Shalom Noach and Kovet. They didn't deal enough respect. They accepted each other, but they didn't respect each other enough. Why? Because each one said, look, I have my derech, and it's a narrow derech. I see what I'm doing, and I'm interested in what the other one's doing. And not only that, I don't respect what he's doing. My way is the right way. And therefore, they didn't feel any necessity of sharing their Torah with the other. It's a different derech. I'm not doing it. I can't even take out the things that are in common. All I see is something different. I'm right, and that's it. There's nothing value I can take from the other one, or share with it. I can't give them over my derech. I'm not going to convince him. And he's surely not going to convince me. So let him learn his Torah, learn my Torah. But no connection. And with that respect from Noah who called it, they didn't respect each other's Torah. They didn't respect each other's approach. They didn't respect each other the way they should have respected each other. Of course there have to be different drawings, but respect the other derech. And if you hold there's something wrong with it, give Torah. Give Musar. But the Musar comes from love, from respect. Not from zilzul, not from a disrespect. It comes from respect of the other person. And therefore I'm concerned that you do what's right. And if I feel you're doing something wrong, I want to help you. I love you enough to care about you. That's so far. And that's real shalom, giving so far. Shalom without so far is no shalom. But it has to be with that intention, from that perspective. And then the way it's done with love and done with respect. It's not done in a way that represents hatred and represents disrespect. That is crucial to Kabbalah Satori. You can have all the aspirations, you can have all the derech eretz, you can have all the tirka, all the omel and yegiyah, but if you don't unite with your fellow Jew, there's no way of being a Kabbalah Satori's individual. You could be a perfect individual, but a bunch of them didn't give the Torah to individuals. He gave it to Klal Yisrael. And if you're not a card-carrying member of Klal Yisrael, you don't feel one with the rest of the people, then you're not capable and you're not eligible for Matan Torah. That's why, before we start reading the reenactment of Kabbalah HaTorah, which we all stand up for, I'm sure as we say Akdamas. Akdamas, basically, is the representation of the greatness of the Jewish people as a people, vis-a-vis the nations of the world, vis-a-vis the Rabban Shalom. It speaks about the Jewish people as a nation. That's what you have to preface the giving of the Torah. Don't look at yourself as an individual. Don't look at yourself in a narrow little group or little clique and you're going to receive the Torah. If you don't look at yourself as part and parcel of Klal Yisrael and respect every other member of Klal Yisrael, and again, respect doesn't mean that I have to accept everything everybody does. There's a mitzvah of Hokeya Fokeya. There's a mitzvah of rebuke. But the mitzvah of rebuke is out of love and respect. If you can't do that, then you can't receive the Torah. If you can't say Akdamas, then you can't come to the Chodesh HaShemesh. Yes, Hashem, if we're able to prepare ourselves now, we're able to put in the work that's necessary in fixing up our own characters, our own personalities, in gaining those aspirations, in putting in the toil and bother and discomfort of trying to improve our level of soul, and doing it not as individuals, but doing it as members, as part of the totality of Klal Yisrael, with a respect and an honor and a appreciation of every other Jew. Those Jews who are our helpmates are those who are going to help us be able to receive the entire Tariq Mitzvah. Then we'll be able to come Shavuot morning and be able to once again proclaim Nasa the Nishma, Ribono Shel Olam, we're ready. We put in the preparation. And then we'll be able to celebrate Shavuot, celebrate our preparation. And then the day after Shavuot, we'll be able to celebrate his Sukkot when the Ribono Shel Olam can celebrate that he was able to give us the Torah. And then we should be able to reach the true level that Klal Yisrael has to reach, where the Torah will be accepted in its full glory, via the Shia, the chain of the universe.